Okay, coming on for our weekly live broadcast, and I'm going to be looking at a couple questions over here. Let's see. Hey, MM, how are you? By the way, I saw a message that came through. There was a link that was sent out for the schedules, and my link's already been taken down now. That's probably what happened, because I know there were at least, I don't remember how many, 8 or 9 people that had scheduled like within the first 24 hours. And so those spots had gone, MM, but I'm going to go ahead and get something set up for you so that we can go ahead and take care of it. So I know there were a couple people that aren't here regularly. Andrea, I believe Louise, Tiffany, there were a number of people that aren't here regularly that were actually, that got that link for me. So I'm not sure what happened with UMM, but we'll get that link out to you. I'll try to get that out to you, or Cindy will try to get that out to you in the next, probably in the next couple of days. All right. So hi, everybody. Let's see. Luis says, "Send me something today about being moderated." I click open this, but can't find anywhere. I didn't send anything out, Luis, today. It would have been a couple of probably about a week ago, but I can certainly send that out again, and maybe Andrea can send that to you, or one of the, or Tiffany maybe could send that to you. But I'll try to get that out to you as well. All right. Okay. So. There have been a lot of different questions that have been submitted, and what I'm going to try to do in order to make this the most efficient, because I don't think that we are able to even get to, you know, more than a couple of questions per week, and the questions are coming in a lot faster than that. So what I'm going to try to do, just to be as fair as possible, is to try to answer the oldest questions and just try to catch up that way, because otherwise, if I'm just taking the most recent questions or something, it just doesn't, it's not the most, it's not the fairest way of doing it. Okay, so we have a question that came in. It's a question from Kimberly, and last name is Andre. And Kimberly is from the United States. It's a general toxicity question. And let's see. The question is, Dr. Pitar, I'm a 65-year-old female with rheumatoid arthritis diagnosed 6 years ago. I've never taken prescription meds, but I'm trying to treat holistically with autoimmune diet and natural inflammatories. I think she meant natural anti-inflammatories, like turmeric and supplements. I have managed to feel healthy in every way except my shoulders are the targeted weak spot, with bone-on-bone pain, sometimes bad, sometimes not so bad. I began NDO 1 2 weeks ago. You suggested I use a formula for joints, but I wanted to start one and then the other. For exercise, I walk a lot, do light weights for muscle retention, but 2 weeks ago, I overdid push-ups. I compensated my wrecked shoulders by putting too much force on my elbows, and now I have a bursa on my elbow. I began rest, ice, compression, and elevation, worked a little, not enough. Then I transplanted some azaleas back to square one. What am I lacking in my nutrition? What am I lacking in my nutrition that this happened? I was a bodybuilder for 25 years. Any suggestions? Okay, so part of this is I should have kept this particular question for the IADFW, but let me answer some of the things from a general perspective. And this question is a question that probably affects more than, I'd say probably more than 20% of people over the age of 60, possibly even a lot more than that. So when you start looking at things such as rheumatoid arthritis, you start looking at things such as osteoarthritis, such as degenerative joint, but basically a cover-all terminology that's used to bring in all degenerative joint type conditions. Anything that's arthritic or that's bone-related that is chronic in nature, anything that causes inflammation or pain, that especially with the increase in humidity or cold will make it worse. Anything like that, or fracture sites of sites that have prosthesis in them, like a hip or a knee replacement, any of those types of things. Those types of conditions can be pretty dramatically impacted from a symptomatic standpoint in as little as 60 seconds. So I'm not going to go into the specific here, but I will on the IADFW portion. But I know that for you, Kimberly, since you asked this question, and since you're on NDO1, you're already an IADFW member. If you weren't, you wouldn't have access to that. So for those people that were at the Advanced Medicine Conference, during my first lecture when I talked about the impact of belief, and basically it was talking about experience and all the five different levels of experience and how these experiences and how our experiential experience impacts our physiology, and going back to essentially the whole concept of your environment having an impact on you, and that goes everything from your internal environment, your external environment, the environment within your brain, and you know, your physiological environment, it's everything. And in fact, it talks about the lecture talked about the specific impact on our physiology. So for those of you that were present at that conference, at the Advanced Medicine Conference, you saw us bring up about, I guess it was probably 30 people up on stage, and it was a question that I put out there, and it was specifically regarding joint problems. If any of you that are online right now remember that, that was a very specific reason I brought that particular patient subpopulation up from the audience, because I wanted to see how many people's joints, where they had chronic joint pain, how many of those people we could impact in, you know, the 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever. And pretty much I think there was nobody there that wasn't impacted in less than 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. And that is just from a symptomatic standpoint. Now, there are other components to it, which actually the more you use it, the less a person's problem becomes problematic. I guess that's the best way of saying it. It's not as problematic. The problems become less problematic. But the question is, what are you lacking nutritionally that allows you to re-injure or potentially re-injure yourself? So let me answer that question. And then from a symptomatic relief standpoint, you already said it in the message, Kimberly, that I had suggested two different components for you, and you decided to start one. Do start the other one too, and that's a local one, okay? So there's two formulas. One is a locally applied, and one is a systemically applied. But let's talk about the nutrient aspect, and then I will go back into this into more detail on the IADFW side. So from a nutrient standpoint, whenever somebody is injuring themselves or find themselves more prone to injuries or find themselves not as resilient as they used to be, or whatever the phenomena may be, where you yourself on some level are conscious that you are more susceptible to injuries or becoming more susceptible to becoming more susceptible to the things that you used to do and didn't have a problem with, but now when you're doing those same things, they end up becoming more problematic or less, you're less resilient, maybe that's the best term to say it. If you're experiencing that type of scenario, then there are two components that you need to start looking at, okay? Now, obviously, if you've got a bursa on your elbow from doing the push-ups, you strained your elbows too much while doing your push-ups, you already had a chronic injury. So there's a lack of recovery time, perhaps. That's the first thing. And as when people say, well, this is just because you're old, that's a bunch of garbage, okay? There's no such thing. But as we mature, our requirement increases for us to recover when we are injured, because we're not in the growth phase of our life as we were when we were younger, when we were, you know, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20 years old, we're in a growth phase. So healing is a lot faster. But as we start to hit our 50s and our 60s and our 70s, especially as we get into our 60s and 70s, our ability to heal as fast is reduced. There's no such thing as that the recovery, you can't, when people say, well, that's just because you're too old, that's not true. There's no such thing. That's just all garbage. But our ability to recover from an injury may take a little bit longer. And so you may not be giving yourself enough time to recover. That's the first thing from those injuries. The second thing is from a nutrient standpoint, I have found that the single most important component that one needs from a nutrient standpoint when they're prone to injuries and when they're trying to recovery, especially based upon our chronological age, we tend to start wasting minerals. All right, so we need to have a very, very good broad spectrum multivitamin mineral, but it's actually the mineral component in injuries is more prevalent. This includes not just joint issues, but actually includes muscle injuries, strains, sprains. If you've had any type of bruising, fall, you're sore, but especially when it comes to like the low back strains and when it comes to things such as just overall joint issues, minerals are one of the most important component, okay? And then how our bodies are able to absorb those minerals, that's one of the biggest issues because sometimes we don't absorb them the way we need to. So absorption is a key, which now comes back to the gut. So how your gut's functioning, how well your gut's functioning. And now this comes all the way back to the MAP to Get Ahead program that we've talked about before. There's those five components that you have to do. We call it the two simple changes to implement in your life to change your life. But there are actually five components in the video. And the reason I only say that the label of the video is two simple changes to implement to change your life, and yet I talk about five, the reason that I do that is because three of them are literally passive. You know, all you have to do is consciously think about it and then just do it, but they're passive in the sense that you could be reading a book or you could be, you know, peeling the potatoes or, you know, whatever you want to do while doing a couple of these components. So there are only two that take a concerted effort, in my opinion, and it's not that much of an effort either because I've broken that down about as simple as a person possibly could. So those five changes, if you're doing that in the MAP to Get Ahead program, that's going to help you, first of all. All right, now, the key is consistency. So one of those five steps, specifically the second one that I talk about on the video, you're already doing one of them, but the other one, if you just start doing this, and I've actually talked about this in the book too, The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away, that in itself is going to make a massive difference. Now you add a good quality multi-mineral, and if you remember the IEDFW, then that would be, you would look at M4. That's what you'd want to get. Obviously, if you're not an IEDFW member, it's irrelevant because you can't access this stuff, but for those of you that are IEDFW members, M4 is a key. And I'll talk about the other component when we get into the IEDFW component. But minerals are probably the most important component. And I'm not just talking about a single mineral. You know, some people say, well, magnesium, you need to do this, or you know, you need to do more calcium because you're obviously not absorbing enough calcium, or you know, it's a selenium issue, or you want silica, or you know, all those things are important and all those things are correct. None of those pieces of information I just put out there that people would say would be considered incorrect because you know, a person may have low silica or low phosphorus, and that may be the reason, or it's another person may be low in magnesium or low in selenium or whatever the case is. My overall thought process has always been that we should supplement in balance. And when we take a single supplement by itself, unless there's a very specific reason to do so, like if we've done urine, hair, fecal, and red blood cell analysis, and we see a person is very low in, say, you know, in the blood chemistries, they show they're low in potassium, which can now cause irritability in the heart. And, you know, we see a low reservoir in other vectors as well as in the urine, say, or the hair, or whatever the case may be. I am going to supplement potassium singly, or maybe magnesium singly. But that's usually not, I don't usually take a mineral in a single manner and then supplement it. I usually do it in a broad spectrum. Now, there are certain exceptions to that rule because if we have people in the clinic and we're measuring certain things, as I said, and we're giving them intravenous treatments or whatever the case may be, and we see some of these specific mineral levels lower than the rest of them, then I will give specific minerals either orally and or intravenously to help to bring those levels back up. But generally speaking, I don't do that because you can create a relative deficiency in a mineral by supplementing a single mineral. What I mean by that is that if I give somebody, say I see copper, I start giving somebody copper, okay? I start supplementing copper, and because I see that copper is low, or I think that copper is low, but zinc to copper in the body should be at a very specific ratio. So when you're checking the urinary reserve, the zinc to copper ratio should be 10 to 1 zinc to copper. All right, but if I start giving a lot of copper and the ratio of zinc to copper goes to 5 to 1, even though I've brought the copper back up to maybe the normal level, I've created a relative deficiency of zinc because I've given too much copper that's thrown the balance off, right? So you end up becoming like a dog chasing its tail because you're trying to balance the system. And what we have to understand as human beings, no matter how good we may be as doctors or physiologists or PhDs or whatever the case is, we are not going to supersede the ultimate engineer's design, okay, God's design. So by giving a single supplement, the problem we run into, the potential problem we run into, is that imbalance that we're creating, the relative deficiency that we're creating. And of course, like I said, I do that sometimes, but I'm doing that in a clinical setting with a patient where I'm measuring certain things, and it's only to bring that one level up, and then I go back to the broad spectrum. I never stop giving the broad spectrum support. In other words, I don't say, okay, now I'm going to pull off the multi-mineral and not just give you copper. I'm not going to do that because then I'm going to create exaggerated relative deficiencies. What I want to do is I want to give them the blanket component that's covering them with everything, and then I want to supplement with some additional, in that particular case, if it's copper, to help to get rid of that immediate deficiency that I'm seeing without creating a potential catastrophe by creating a relative deficiency, all right? And this is a very, very big issue when we start dealing with chelators, because that is one of the things. Chelators are extremely effective, but we're not just pulling out the bad things, we're pulling out some of the good things, and those are the minerals. And so we have to make sure we're replenishing the system. So coming back to the original question, with Kimberly for the arthritis component. So you want to make sure you've got good quality minerals. If you're not EDFW member, our recommendation is M4. A lot of doctors are using M4 in their own practices. It's a very broad spectrum mineral. So that's one component. I'll make a couple of the suggestions on the IEDFW component when I go there. But then you also want to make sure there's other components, there's B vitamins and such. And again, I'm giving you a very, very basic component, not to prevent things like juvenile rheumatoid arthritis or osteoarthritis or degenerative joints, but more talking about the susceptibility to injuries. So if you're susceptible to injuries, and you know, your question was, what nutrients am I lacking? You're lacking one nutrient is of rest, because if you're injured, you need to give yourself more rest. And two, the nutrients from a broad spectrum is a good quality multivitamin, multimineral. Minerals, because we tend to waste them, and the vitamins, just because you need the B5, B6, the B12. During periods of stress, our bodies are burning through those B vitamins, okay? And we are, when we are in recovery mode or when we've injured ourselves, we're also utilizing more B vitamins, because when you get adrenally exhausted, when your adrenal glands are really being weighed down, when you're being under duress, let's put that, when your body's under stress, physiological stress or physical stress or emotional, psychological, mental stress, it doesn't make any difference. You are burning through minerals and you're burning through your B vitamins. So when you want to support the adrenals, that's one of the things, besides all the specific things we do with the adrenals, you want to support the body with the B vitamins and the minerals. So we do that, and that's why I'm recommending that you do that if you're in a body, if your body's injured, because that is a type of stress. So B vitamins and minerals, and of course there's other components, but a good quality multivitamin would probably suffice, and then taking the additional minerals. So a good quality multivitamin, again, this isn't relevant for all of you unless you're an IEDFW member, but that would be M4 for the minerals, and the M1, which is our overall multivitamin. That's what I recommend. That's what I take on a daily basis. Of course, there's other multivitamins you can take and minerals you can take. And you're welcome to do that. But that's what we use in our clinic. That's what we use with certain doctors that have come through our training program use. That's what I personally use. That's what my family members use. And so if you want to try that, that's where I'd start. Then, of course, making sure you give yourself enough rest and then start looking at NDO2. But we'll talk more about that when we get to the IEDFW portion. All right. So that was a pretty long answer to that question. And let me just go through here and see if there's... some comments regarding this. Alexia asks, did you hear that the FDA is destroying stem cells harvested and stored for years because they say that stem cells are considered a regulated drug? The company is US Stem Cells Inc. Is this going to be the norm going forward with stem cell harvesting and storage? I feel so sorry for the people who are having their stem cells destroyed. My sister is one of those affected. She wanted to use them for low back disc injections. So, Alexia, I have not heard this. I do know that for children that are born, like my youngest son, who's now 14, when he was born, we did retain placental cord blood. That was an option that we were given. So I don't think that's affecting those types of stem cell harvested from the individual themselves. In other words, what we call autologous or autogenous stem cell harvesting. I don't know about that, and that's something that we may need to check into. I do know there are other things that the FDA is doing, but not around the stem cells. I know that they're trying to ban the importation of DMPS, which is a very effective mercury chelator. That I know. I can't comment specifically on that, Alexia. Okay, Kimberly is actually Kimberly Andre, who asked the question, happens to be online today. So that's good. That worked out good, Kimberly. I'm glad that we were able to answer your question. You're here. Tracy says, I don't see M4 on the advanced medicine dashboard. Can we order it online? Actually, if it's not on the dashboard, we'll get it on there. There are a lot of things that probably aren't on the dashboard, and then I talk about it and people ask, but... somebody made the comment that, you know, when I'm doing these broadcasts, I'm not planning well because I'm not having the products on the line. But I'm not talking about these things to sell the products. I'm just talking about it because it becomes pertinent. And then, you know, we've never created a product to try to sell. We've always created a product because we had a need, because we had a patient in the clinic that needed something. So then we created something for that person, and that's how some of these things actually started. So I apologize if it seems like we're not organized. It's not that we're not organized. I just don't think that way. So the reason it's not on there is because I've never thought about having it on there, but you're asking the question, so I'm telling you, and you have access to the stuff, so there's no reason why we shouldn't have it on there. So I will make sure that we have M4 and M1 put on the dashboard for the IEDFW members. You're most welcome, Kimberly. Most welcome. Susan asks... React poorly to methyl bees. Okay, if you react, I assume the question is, what if you react poorly to methyl bees? So, Susan, if you react poorly to methyl bees, there's a couple of issues going on. One, it could be the form that the B vitamins are in. Okay, so there's different components. Some people can't absorb them. Some people, because they're in the pre-digested way, if you can think of it that way. So what I call end-chain B vitamins, meaning that they've already gone through the process of breakdown. So we have those versions. Sometimes it's just not good quality stuff that a person's taking. Sometimes there's an allergenicity component, but it's not the allergenicity to B vitamins, because if you were truly allergic to B vitamins, you'd be dead because you can't sustain life without B vitamins. But it's more a component of the fillers or the additives or something else in that formulation that is probably the issue. I've had a lot of people that have come to us because they've had an allergy to X, Y, or Z or something like that, and we give them the stuff and they don't have a problem with it. Milk is a perfect example. People that say they have a milk allergy or a dairy allergy, they end up having all these reactions. So sometimes people say, well, I get a lot of burping, I'll get a lot of flatulence, I get a lot of cramping, I get a lot of, you know, these type of things when I take dairy, I get a lot of diarrhea. Those aren't really allergies. That's more intolerance, more lactose intolerance. And then when they see our protein, which many of you probably have already used or are using the Medicalicious protein that's available at the IEDFW, you'll notice that that's 100% whey isolate protein. So people will see that's coming from whey, which is dairy, and they'll say, oh, I can't take that. I have never, ever, ever had a single person that has said that they can't take this, and then I've told them, go ahead and take it. You're not going to see the same problem. And they take it, and they've had a dairy issue where they get a catharsis, you know, the cathartic type loose bowel movements, or they end up having whatever issues they get whenever they take dairy. I've never had a person that had dairy issues that's taken that protein and had the same issue. Why? Because, again, it's not dairy per se. It's taking it's a 100% cold-filtered whey isolate. So there's three different components to when you take the protein out of milk. Whey is a very specific component of milk. And then from that whey, we're taking out a very specific component of the protein. So there's whey concentrate, there's whey caseinate, whey concentrate, and whey isolate. Whey caseinate is the most abundant protein, and it's actually can have some allergenicity. Whey concentrate is less issue. Whey isolate is like the highest level quality of the protein. So the protein that we have that's available is 100% whey isolate. It is a very, very specific component of the protein component, of a specific component of the milk, of the dairy, of the milk, which is the whey component. And people just don't have an issue with it. So a lot of times when we're allergic to things, for example, I've had people that when I used to be an ER doctor, I've got about almost 12,000 hours of ER documented time when I was before my first son was born. Abby was born. He was born in 1999. So up until then, up until January 1999, I had opened my practice after I got out of the military. And from 1996, when I got out of the military, till 1999, I worked in emergency rooms too. And I can tell you that every single person that came into that emergency, those emergency rooms that I worked at, that had what they called a sulfur allergy, did not have a sulfur allergy. And that kind of got me going on this thing where I started looking at sulfur allergies and trying to understand them. Let me tell you something. It is impossible to have a sulfur allergy. Now, why am I talking about a sulfur allergy when we're just talking about milk? Because this is how people think. They think, okay, well, every time I eat an egg, I end up having hives, so I must have a sulfur allergy. No, you don't have a sulfur allergy, because if you had a sulfur allergy, because that, this is the thought process that I can't take a sulfur drug, okay? If you have a sulfur drug. Now, I personally, if I take a sulfur drug, I break out in hives. But does that mean I have a sulfur allergy? No, because if I truly had a sulfur allergy, I would be dead, because sulfur is essential to life. So you have these amino acids, and these amino acids form clumps of amino acids or chains of amino acids, and we call those peptides. And then you have a bunch of different peptides, and put those together, they form what they call polypeptides. And polypeptides convolute, and they combine, and they come into this like a big ball of yarn-looking thing, and these are the different types of proteins. So proteins are nothing more than a combination of polypeptides, which are a combination of peptides, which are a combination of amino acids. In order for that protein now to maintain its integrity, to be morphologically functional, it must maintain its wrapped up like a ball of yarn. Okay, it's not like a straight train, like when you look at the amino acids and you sequence them out, it's like a straight line. But when it's in the protein structure, it just, you know, waddles up into this ball-like scenario. If you look at a Google image of, in fact, I'll have Nubiel do this, but if you Google image of a protein, you'll see that it's a whole twisted, ball of yarn-looking type of sequence of amino acids. In order for the protein to be functional, it must maintain that structure. If you change it, or if you try to unravel it, that's called protein denaturing, and that's not consistent with life. How does that protein maintain its structure? Through things called sulfhydryl bonds. Okay, these are sulfur-based bonds. So if you were allergic to sulfur, you'd be dead, because you wouldn't be able to have that sulfur in your body. So it's ludicrous. So then why do I get hives when I take a sulfur drug? Well, it's nothing to do with the sulfur. It's what people have called it. It's actually something else. It's something else that's an additive in that sulfur drug. So sulfur drugs, for example, the generic name for Bactrim or for Sceptra, these are drugs that are used commonly, sulfur-based drugs for urinary tract infections. So Bactrim sulfa, Bactrim or Sceptra, that's trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole. That's the generic components of Sceptra or Bactrim. It's trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole. So you're not allergic to the sulfamethoxazole. You're allergic to probably the trimethoprim or some component within there. But we start thinking, oh, we're allergic to the sulfur drug. So now we stop eating eggs and all this stuff because we're allergic to protein. So my point, again, is you're not allergic to what you think you're allergic to. When you drink dairy and you have a problem, and then you say, oh, I can't have anything but dairy, and anything that's dairy, now you think, well, it's dairy related, so I'm going to have an allergy to it. That is not the case, okay? It is certain components within that substance that it's causing an allergenicity. So you end up throwing out the baby with the bathwater, and that's not a good thing to do. In addition to that, dairy, and since we're talking about dairy, I'll just mention this with way isolated, since that was an example that we brought up. When you're talking about dairy, I want you to remember this part. It's not the issue with the dairy. It's what we do to the dairy, and it's what we do to our own systems, and that creates a problem. So humans have been drinking cow's milk for eons, okay, for hundreds of thousands of years. Cows have been domesticated for hundreds of thousands of years. But we've never had those types of problems up until probably the last 100 years. And that came about because of the use of bovine growth hormone to make the cows bigger, faster, feeding them grains that were basically grown using insecticides and pesticides. So that throws off the grains, and then you've got genetically modified components in this, and that alters the genetic component of it. And now you're feeding that to the cows, and then the cows are ingesting this, and it's becoming part of their system, and then they're producing milk now that has been genetically modified and that has insecticides and pesticides. And of course, then the cattle are put into these small pens, and they give them antibiotics so that they don't get diseases. And now you're getting all those antibiotics and insecticides and pesticides and genetically modified components that you're ingesting in the milk or in the meat that you're eating from the cows. And so the cycle gets worse and worse and worse. So we're becoming a more sensitized population because we've got a lot more garbage in our food systems over the last, 50 to 75 years. And that's why it becomes so important to eat organically and eat clean and eat range-fed, and, as you know, find a farmer in your local area if you are able to, or find a farmer that raises cattle himself, and then whatever he's going to keep back for himself, get your meat from that source. These are the common ways, or get things that are organic as best as you can, because we are what we eat, and there's so much that we in what we eat that's just garbage, and then it creates these hyper allergenicity issues and autoimmune conditions, and then we start blaming it on dairy, or we start blaming it on other things, and there are certain things that are problematic. Obviously, like, I've been always a person that believes that gluten is not the issue. It's our guts that are the issue, and we become more sensitized. But there's more and more stuff that's being done to the grains, and so that's altered the gluten. Why didn't we have all these gluten issues, 75 to 100 years ago? Well, because our guts were stronger as a world society, and we didn't have all this genetically modified garbage and all these insecticides and pesticides that have now caused the gluten component to change or adjust. I don't know. I'm not a researcher in gluten. I'm just saying that there's a reason why it hasn't been a problem 100 years ago, and it's a massive problem today. So yes, I do avoid things with gluten, but not because I believe gluten's a problem, but because I believe what we've done to our food supply has changed the gluten, and what we've done to our own bodies over the last 50, 7500 years has also changed, and we've become more insensitive to these things, or maybe I should say become more sensitive, more sensitized to these things. And again, God's design is not a mistake. It's a perfect design. So when we're taking in things that aren't good for us, and when our systems have been abused or damaged, then the ingestion of those things becomes more problematic. So I'm going to say this right now. This would be something that I'll expand on this in the IEDFW portion, but I want to say this right now because this is really, really important. I want you guys to take this at face value. This is an incredible, incredible gift when you end up having some type of a response to the food that you eat that may be negative. It's a tremendous gift. Well, how can you say that, Dr. Tarr? How can you say having a gluten sensitivity is such a gift? Because it's your body's feedback mechanism warning you and telling you, hey, wake the hell up and stop eating this. Because I sometimes eat things and they create a problem for me, and I've never had that problem. And in the beginning, I was thinking, what's going on with me? Why am I? And I realized, what a blessing, because our systems are becoming more into, at least the cleaner you get, you're going to see this phenomenon too. The more detox you've had, the more detoxification you've had, the more sensitized you become to your environment, the more sensitive you become to your environment. But what a gift it is that if you eat something and your body reacts in a certain manner, it tells you, whatever it is, whether that's gluten or not gluten, blah, blah, blah. You can eat certain things and make you feel good, and that's fine. And, you know, if you eat dark chocolate and makes you feel good, that's fantastic. You know, I love dark chocolate, and I eat it, and sometimes I wish that dark chocolate created some kind of problem for me so I wouldn't eat so much of it. But there's certain things that we eat that we may think are okay for us, and then we get a reaction to it. That's your body giving you a signal, giving you feedback, directing you, warning you. It is your consultant. It's your health consultant telling you on your shoulder, hey, don't eat this because it's causing a problem for you. It's not rocket science. It's a very simple thing, but what a gift. But yet we look at it, look at our mindset. Our mindsets are totally different. Oh my God, I'm having this problem when I take this in. Change your mindset. Change your mindset that when you have a reaction to a food, be grateful and be thankful that your body is that attuned that it is warning you that X, Y, and Z that you're ingesting or that you're drinking is giving you this response, this reaction, because then your body is now becoming, you're becoming partners with your body in order to achieve a better state of health, to achieve the wellness that you desire. So say the prayer of thanks. Give that intention. When you have a reaction to something that you've eaten, be grateful because your body is guiding you. It is helping you to stay on the right track so that you remain healthy and you continue to maintain your state of wellness and continue to live a long and healthy and prosperous life. If you consistently take in things that are going to be detrimental, that your body's going to have an adverse reaction to, then that's telling you there's wear, tear, damage, whatever is going on in your body, and you're decreasing that state of wellness, and you're not going to be able to live as long because you're going to be chronically abusing your system, and the reactions that you're having to the foods that you're having, that you're eating, is that proof, that manifestation, right? So if somebody is very, very overweight, for example, that in itself is telling me that your body is telling you something. Okay, and how does a person start losing weight? And I've done everything that I know to lose weight, but I haven't been able to. Well, I mean, this is going to go into a different topic. But you know what? We've got somebody online right now. MM is a great believer in the 9 steps to keep the doctor away, the book that I wrote. And he's a perfect example of somebody that starts doing those steps, and they're going to start losing body fat. I think, MM, you were already down below 40 pounds or something, your wife had said last week. But, okay. This is a perfect example. When you start doing the things right, your body will start to realign. The body's tendency and desire is not to retain body fat. I'm telling you right now, the body starts going into a state of holding on to body fat because of certain components, certain lifestyle choices that we've made, certain thought processes we had, certain mindsets that we have. And we start doing changing that around, the side effect or the consequence, the natural consequences of the body to lose body fat. All right, so let me go on to the next question. Tracy, I will get that taken care of regarding the M4. Lynn asks, my son is autistic, 26, nonverbal. Is it too late for treatment for him? Lynn, it's never too late for treatment, but here's the problem. Beyond the age of 13, 14, our results start to exponentially decrease. And the reason is because the brain loses its elasticity. The brain is highly, highly elastic in the first 7 years of life. That's one reason a child can pick up and learn a language, a new language like that. You know, it's like not even a thought process. It just happens. Whereas for somebody in their 20s or even in their late teen years, they have to exert effort to learn a new language because the neural pathways have already basically been established and the brain is no longer as elastic as it was, okay? And so when somebody's already 26, the brain has basically completely formed at this point and it's not as elastic. Now, my oldest child that I have that is today neurotypic, who was autistic when they came to me, is a young man whose name is David, and he was 16 when we started his treatment, and he's now, I think, in his late 20s, or, gosh, David must be, he must be like 26, 28 years old now, and maybe he's even older than that, I don't know, you know, and he's fine now today, but he wasn't. That's the oldest child that I've treated that's totally neurotypic. I've treated people in their 30s, and actually had a 42-year-old with a lot of severe seizure disorder that was severely autistic, and we were able to reduce his seizures. He was having multiple grand mal seizures a day down to, you know, one grand mal every 2 weeks or so. And so his parents were very grateful for that. But, you know, we weren't able to change the damage that had already been done from the chronicity of that, of the toxicity from the mercury and from whatever else, you know, contributed to that. But mercury is the thing that causes the denudation of the fibrils. So, you know, can we improve verbalization and functionality? I've had a number of young adults. In fact, just was looking at a video of a young man that we treated, and he went from no ability to talk to being able to voice certain words, was not able to go out in public, but then was able to get to the point that he could go to church and hum along with the hymns while his parents were in church. Was able to start to dress himself and put on his own clothes, get on a bus himself. And so that it took about 6 months of treatment to get him to that point. And he was 23, I believe, when we started his treatment. But, you know, he will never be neurotypic, is what I call neurotypic. So hopefully that answers your question, Lynn. Paul says, my grandson has a B12 deficiency. He has been taking B12 shots, but his B12 is still low. Your thoughts? Yeah, that's a perfect example, you know, because it's not, you know, when we talked about the end chain component. So you can give the body whatever you think it needs, but if you're not giving it the form the body needs, whatever you're measuring is still going to be low because the body's not getting what it needs. Okay, it's not getting it in the format that you need. Think of it as how do I explain this? The form that it's being delivered in is not seen by the body as what your body is low in. Okay. And so there are ways of bypassing that, and that's one reason. In fact, we used to give B12 injections, and we rarely give B12 injections now unless there's a certain reason to. But on a like somebody comes in, they need a B12 injection, we do that. But anybody who is requiring B12 on a regular basis, injections are not the way to do it, because you know you can't have somebody on injections the rest of their life. I mean, I guess you could, like with insulin diabetes and stuff like that, but it basically means that they're not absorbing the Bs, and we do it in a different way. I'm not going to get into all those details, but they are components that we have. And actually, if you're on IEDFW, I'll put all these things. So I'll put M1, M2. I think M3 is already on there, and M8. I don't know if M8 is on there, but we'll have a couple components on there, and we'll talk about what those are and what they do, and that way you guys can have access to it if you're IEDFW members. Paul said he's 2 years old. Yeah, Paul, I totally understand. Again, injections, B12 injections, so some people help, some other people that do it, even though the B vitamins are low and it doesn't help. So, again, you need to talk to, you know, again, I'm not treating your grandson, and you don't have guardianship over your grandson, so we're talking about like a, you know, we're talking like three degrees of separation here, but I don't want you going to your son or daughter and then saying, well, Dr. Tar said this, because again, I'm not the treating physician. And you know, from a general standpoint, this is what happens. When B12 shots are being given, the B12 and some people help and other people, the shots don't help. And the reason it doesn't help is because the form that they're getting it in is not in a form that the body can assimilate and utilize. And that's why it doesn't change their levels and it doesn't help them. Okay, hopefully that helps. All right, I'm going to switch very quickly to Instagram, see if there's any questions on Instagram, because I don't want to neglect people. So, hello to everyone. Okay, so what state are you in? So, we are in two states, in California and in North Carolina, and from the clinic aspect, I'm all over the place, so physically, but that's where the clinics are. All right, and the question is, help me with anxiety, please. Okay, so I just saw this question right below, so let me answer that. The second one, which is, where do we post questions? So the questions are posted if you go to askdrbitar.com. It's ASK, Ask Dr. DR, and then my last name, V-U-T-T-A-R. AskDrBitar.com, and you can go there and submit your questions. All right, coming back with anxiety. So when we're dealing with things such as anxiety or with depression or with those types of issues, I can't go into this in a short broadcast here, but basically there's a lot of different components to this, okay? Anxiety, depression, very, very close, and I approach them both the same way. A lot of this has to do with what I call the fifth toxicity. So the seven toxicities, if you read the nine steps to keep the doctor away, or actually if I talk about the seven toxicities, but you can actually even go into your advanced medicine dashboard and on the left-hand side under education, click on those tabs where it says facts on toxicity, and you'll find those videos that you can watch. And the fifth toxicity, I go into the fifth toxicity quite a bit. And the fifth toxicity actually is the most significant one when it comes to things such as cancer as well. So your question is, help me with anxiety, please. And I would say that the first step that you need to do is you need to go in, if you don't have an account at advancedmedicine.com, go to advancedmedicine.com and you can register there for free. You do need an invitation code so you can get on Facebook, or if any of the moderators if anybody is on Instagram, you can share your invitation code with I think it's Lede or L-E-D-E, Lede, and they will, that invitation code will allow you access to create your own free dashboard. And when you create your dashboard, on the left hand side at advancedmedicine.com, you'll see facts and toxicity. Go through those videos and you'll see the fifth one, which is emotional psychological, and that's where we go into what contributes to anxiety and how things can be changed. And it's actually applicable to depression, but it's actually applicable to any type of emotional psychological trauma. And that's what anxiety usually starts from. Anxiety and depression, they all go back to that root cause of some type of a trauma, some type of a fear, some type of a this an underlying reason that a person feels that way. And so then to be able to deal with that, you have to first effectively address, you know, what that is. And for the people that are for people that are part of the Map to Get Ahead program, for the coaches, we are going to be implementing an emotional technique that'll not a technique, but a treatment, a method of treating. There's many different techniques you can get access to, but there's a very specific treatment modality that we use in our clinic, and it's a form of biofeedback, and I have found it to be extremely, extremely beneficial. I've been using it for over 10 years. I'm pretty sure I've been using it for over 10 years, and we are going to have that accessible to those people that are, if they want to go ahead and schedule for that, doing the Map to Get Ahead consultations. It's not going to be ready right away. It's probably going to take another month, 2 months to implement. But the coaches are going to get trained on this too, and they will be able to then provide those sessions remotely, no matter where you are in the world. There will be some stuff that has to be shipped to you, and it's some hardware that has to be attached to your computer. And then when you're done with the treatment, which may take, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever it is, then you just send that back. And so you're not having to purchase anything. It's just more like a rental. But anyway, going to a different topic. We'll talk about that. It becomes more applicable. But anxiety, depression, fear, guilt, resentment, forgiveness issues, anger, all these different things, okay, they all kind of come together, and they're all basically addressed the same way. Anxiety and depression seem to be more sociably acceptable because they've gotten our drugs for them, and they've got, you know, all these different things that people do for them. Of course, none of that stuff works, or minimally works, but there's no drug for anger. There's no drug for forgiveness. There's no drug for fear. There's a drug for depression. There's a drug for anxiety, many drugs for anxiety and depression, but the problem is they all come from the same place, right? They all start from the same place, and they're just different roads that extend beyond. And to be able to get rid of that stuff at its core, then you have to come down to the actual causation, okay? What I call the actual etiology, or that basic etiology means what's the actual cause, the root of it all, and have to address it at that point. And a lot of people talk about this from a conceptual standpoint, but, you know, it's lip service. I've been saying this for over a quarter of a century, that I don't treat symptoms, I treat the causation of those symptoms. And by doing so, then the symptom itself becomes our feedback. You know, if the symptom is still present, that means I missed the boat. If the symptom disappears, that means I hit the target. And so that's how we should really look at it. And so anxiety is a symptom of an underlying problem. Hopefully that makes sense later. Simi Mojo says, do you like the Halder-Clark protocols? Actually, Halder-Clark was a friend of mine, and we had many, many conversations. I never met her in person, but we had many conversations that went 2, 3, 4 hours, usually at 1 or 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning. She was on the West Coast. I was on the East Coast at the time. And we would have these long conversations. I actually met her through a mutual friend. And she actually came to a conference that I gave a lecture at in San Diego. She was living in Mexico at that time. But unfortunately, they got mixed up with the schedule. So she came up from Mexico to see me give this lecture on cancer, which she came a week later after the conference had already over. So I never had the pleasure of meeting Halder in person. But she was a wonderful person. Very, very ahead of her time, and we have used many of her protocols. I agree with many of her concepts. I don't use all the different things that Halder talked about, but certainly all the components with, before her, I didn't really realize the importance of the combination of some of the antiparasitic components that we use today. Artemisian and some of the other components that I was, you know, wormwood was a very important part, and clove, and I didn't know many of those things until I read Halder's works probably 15, 20 years ago. So yes, I do like her protocols and had a great deal of respect for her. Can constipation come from parasites? Constipation can come from many different things, many, many different things. And yes, parasites can cause constipation, but it's not limited to that. Autoimmune diseases come from vaccines. Autoimmune diseases, certainly vaccines contribute to autoimmune diseases, yes. Okay, so somebody else asked about where questions are posted. You post questions at Advanced Medicine. I'm sorry. You post questions at AskDrBitar.com. Okay, I must be doing something wrong because somebody's telling me you first need to close the comment box half screen by pulling it down. Yeah, I'm probably not the most savvy person on this, so I apologize for that. Last question here. I have multiple sclerosis. I'm not on medication. What do you recommend? You know, again, it comes down to toxicity. And you have to identify what organs of detoxification are impaired. The first thing we do with anybody that comes to our clinic, and of course you're not a patient, so it wouldn't necessarily be applicable to you, but I would start at going to advancedmedicine.com, register there, and you can create your free dashboard, take the head map. It doesn't cost any money. The head map, Advanced Health Evaluation Assessment for Detoxification Medical Assessment Program, and find out which organs of detoxification are the most impaired and start there. That's where I would start. And I'd start there with any type of condition. That's where I start with anybody who comes to us. I will not see a person in a clinic unless they've done the head map. And actually no other provider is allowed to see anybody either unless they've done the head map. So hopefully that makes sense. Okay. Coming back. Kelly says, maybe MTHFR mutation, does he take a methylated B? Yeah, so, you know, this is, again, methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase enzyme deficiency. It could be a glutathione S transferase issue. It could be a CRMT lesion. It could be an ApoE. Did many different things. But to think that you can take a methylated B vitamin and increase that, it's not that simple. But you know, there's the methylated B vitamins. All B vitamins should be methylated anyway, but that does not make them an in-chain B vitamin. And in-chain B vitamin, just the easiest way to think about it is just what's digested, what's not digested, pre-digested versus not pre-digested. It's the in-chain B vitamins, meaning how the body utilizes it when after it breaks those B vitamins down, and the end component or close to the end component is what we're talking about. Kellyanne says, do you recommend doing an elimination diet and then introducing to C? I'm not sure what you're referring to. If you're talking about a food allergy, yes, we do that, but we don't introduce the substance back in to see what's going to happen. We take them through our ARSV treatments, or we use a couple of other components, but usually ARSV, and we want to introduce it back into the system so that the body can then be retrained so it's not allergic to it. So that's a very deep topic, and I'm not going to go into that right now. Dr. Farah and or her husband, Jack, are online with us too, becoming great friends. Hey, Farah, how are you? Dr. Farah has a lot of experience in utilizing herbal medicine, and I'm hoping to learn from her more. I mean, we use a lot of herbs, and just kind of seeing some of the things that she's doing. She is an MD, but she is more naturopathic than most naturopaths are that I've seen, at least. MM just said, good to see you, Farah. MM says, 45 pounds, I feel great. Okay, so MM's lost 45 pounds. So that's an example of what I just said. If you do the right things, your body is designed to be efficient, okay? And its goal is to reach a certain state that is referred to in quantum physics as zero point. Now, zero point is maximum output with minimal expenditure. What I mean by that? It would be, think of a car that has limitless range and has no need for fuel. So it's maximum output, i.e. it can keep on going forever with minimal input. It needs no fuel. That would be zero point. And our goal from a longevity standpoint, from a health standpoint, from a wellness standpoint, from a mindset standpoint, from an optimization standpoint, from an anything that you do standpoint, should be to achieve zero point, or get as close to as we can to zero point, which is maximum output with minimal expenditure. So this is a phenomena of quantum physics. And when you start to apply those principles to the body, you realize that the body's desire, the body's goal, is to function optimally. And when you have excess body weight on, that's not allowing to function optimally. You know, you have pain when you get up, you got more weight that you got to carry, your heart has more tissue has to perfuse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So once we start doing the right things, the body's own natural tendency will go back into a state of efficiency, and that's what we want. So when we're exercising, for example, we are helping the body become more efficient. It's helping to train the body to become more efficient. We're not exercising for, you know, what is your mindset when you exercise? Very, very important, okay? I know, because I've gone through both extremes, where I couldn't sleep unless I'd worked out, and I mean, you know, very, very hard workouts, and then to the point of being a totally lazy bum and getting fat, and realizing, and that part of it, self-sabotage, and realizing the self-sabotage and looking at it and observing it as a third party, and then getting back up and going back to the opposite extreme and going back and forth, vacillating between the two. It's your mindset, okay? When you exercise, what are you thinking? Are you thinking of it as an obligation? Okay, and that's one of my problems. I've always thought of it as an obligation, and so it's created an internal turmoil for me. Whereas if you look at it from a mindset of efficiency, I'm becoming more efficient. My body's becoming more efficient. When I'm exercising, I'm just training my body to become more efficient. That's all I'm doing. It's a simple thing. I'm doing it so that my body, it approaches zero point. It changes the energy. of your thought process, of your mindset, which now allows you to be able to achieve and accomplish and move towards what you want, which is making your body more efficient. So that simple technique of changing the mindset, and I'm going to be talking more and more about this at some of the things that are coming up, like at our retreat that we're going to try to do in October, but also there's tentatively we've scheduled it for the first week of October, and we're going to be talking about that and a couple of other. We're going to be talking about the mindset aspect and a couple of other very powerful techniques, ways for people to enhance their own systems. And the coaches, the advanced medicine coaches, are going to be trained in some of these components and hopefully be able to expand on this, or at least to be able to give you guys some information on this, so that those that want to participate and learn about some of this information in more depth will have the opportunity to do so. So we want to approach zero point, and zero point is the key that if we can approach zero point in anything we do in life, we're going to be able to do it better, faster, stronger, et cetera, et cetera. All right, so let me get that going there. All right, let me finish on this end. Okay, Luis said the M4 is shown under the patient tab. Thank you for that, Luis. So for those people that were talking about the minerals in the beginning portion, obviously if you're on advanced medicine and you can't see that, or you're not an IADFW member, you won't see that. But if you are an IADFW member, Luis just said if you go underneath the patient tab, on the far left, the M4 is shown there. I'm not sure if that, does that mean that you can order it, Louise? I don't know. I'll have to find that out, because it shouldn't say patient tab. It probably, okay, we need to change that if that's what it says. I'm just making some notes to myself so I can remember this stuff. I'm getting more and more pages of notes that I have not had been able to address yet. You're welcome, Lynn. Amy said, I'm down 22 pounds. Read the 9 steps, people. That's a gift. Thank you, Dr. Carr. Thank you, Amy. I appreciate you saying that. I am very pleased that the book, now in its 9th year, is still continuing to sell. I don't know how many copies, but I know that the statistics are only 3% of books ever sell more than 1,000 copies, total of 1,000 copies. And I think we're probably selling hundreds, if not thousands, of copies every year. I know that we've sold thousands of copies when it first came out, because it hit all the bestseller status, and but I don't know. I know we could continue to sell those books. So I appreciate you saying that, Amy. But it has been a book that has helped many people, and so I'm humbled that it's made such a difference in so many people's lives. But the book is part and parcel of what you get on the when you join the Map to Get Ahead program. You get a copy of the book, electronic and hard copy version. And I will be working on the audio version of it too, because people have asked me about that. But I listen to most of my books nowadays on audio, so I do need to get that done. And I will be working on that to get the book into the audio version. Iman says, Dr. Tar, I have consultation with Sarah next Monday. I'd like to get DNPS chelation since I'm removing my allergies. I found a biological dentist in North Carolina near your office. My question is whether I will be able to meet you. Not sure if I'll be seeing you as well. And also, have you had any patients that you needed, that only needed one chelation, trying to be positive? Yeah, chelation is like a journey. It's not like a destination, okay? And if somebody said that you only needed one chelation, I would say you probably didn't need that one chelation. Because if you need chelation, you're going to need a lot more than just one. And as far as the rest of the things, I'm not in North Carolina at this current moment. And I am spending more time on the West Coast right now. And there's a couple different, I'll be all over the place. I'll probably be back in the office probably, well, I'd prefer not to talk about my schedule on a live broadcast, but I'm sure there'll be an opportunity in the future for us to meet. I'll just leave it at that. All right. Let's see. I will be in the, I'll just say this, that I'll be off and on in the clinic in August, and then back to the West Coast again. So there's a lot of things that are moving. There are a lot of moving parts right now. So that's one reason I don't know what my schedule is always. And patients that are scheduled with me, you know, I know about that schedule, but the rest of it, I don't talk about, because I don't know how they're scheduling things right now. I just know what my schedule is right now. So, but I'm sure that we'll meet in the future. Amy said, oh yeah, my blood sugar was 175 to 280s now, no meds, just 9 steps book, and it's 89 to 100. That's awesome, Amy. That's excellent. And that's, again, if a person follows the steps, and they, you know, physiology is physiology. It's basically how the body works. And a person just needs to follow what the ultimate engineer outlined for us to follow, basically. And that's all the 9 steps is. It's basically a roadmap back to how we should be living our bodies based upon how physiology tells us. Some people say, well, you know, did God speak to you, Dr. Dar, or is, how do you know that God's the one that said, but it's not what I'm saying, that God's saying that. I just know that God created us, physiology. So I'm looking at the physiological rules, the laws of physiology, and understanding physiology. And so based upon how our bodies work, which the ultimate engineer design, that's where I'm taking it from. And I'm saying that these are the rules of how the body works, and this is how we should be doing it, so that we optimize the rules within which our bodies were designed to work. You know, perfect example would be, we're not designed to ventilate water. So if we stick our head underwater, we can't breathe it. That's not how our bodies are designed. We're not ventilated to ventilate smoke. We're not designed to ventilate smoke. So putting a cigarette in your mouth and trying to breathe that is the same thing as slamming your head into water. We're designed to ventilate air, okay? Oxygen is what we need. So plants are designed to intake the carbon dioxide that we give off, and then we take off, and the plants give off oxygen, which is what we take in. So it's a perfect symbiotic relationship between humans and plants, or biological life form and plant life form. But what plants breathe out as waste, we take in as a life-sustaining component, which is oxygen. And what we give out as waste, which is carbon dioxide, plants require that as a life-sustaining substance. And so that's one reason I'm so against cutting down trees or plants. I'm very reluctant to do that, because in my mind, I'm always thinking that, you know, the plants are giving off what we need. So, and what are we doing? We're cutting off the lungs of the planet by cutting down, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres in the Congo and the Amazon. That's one reason when people talk about bleeding hearts, forget about the bleeding heart component, right? I mean, I'm truly a tree hugger, like literally a tree hugger, but that's why I'm concerned about it, because it's going to affect our planet. So I believe in industry, and I believe in capitalism, and I also believe in being responsible. And there's, you don't have to go around and cut down trees that have been around for 300, 400, 500 years. You know, we can, there's farming that can be done. You can farm trees, but, you know, look at hemp. Hemp grows faster, and it's more resilient, and makes better quality paper. And of course, you may not be able to make, you know, furniture out of it, but there's other things that can be done with the hemp stalk that can then be used to make furniture. And they've got shampoos made out of hemp, and they've got, you know, all sorts of different products that are made out of bamboo and all these things. We don't have to go out and cut down all the trees that have been here for so long, is my point. There's other ways of doing it. There's other ways of we're having a more sustainable environment. Okay, I'll step off my preaching block there. There's some guys, Amy, Richard, MM, they're sharing the invitation code. So if you're not a member at advancedmedicine.com, feel free to use one of these invitation codes, and then these individuals will be able to help and guide you in the process. And basically, if you go to advancedmedicine.com, you register there, it's free, doesn't cost any money, but then you'll have access to the head map, and you'll have access to many other components on that webinar. I'm sorry, many other components, including webinars. Shakuri says, how can I contact you? Shakuri, you can send a message right here, or you can contact the office, and they'll be able to help you. Thank you, Louise, for that. Christina says, I have a renal cyst that is growing. Should I be concerned? Renal cysts can be quite benign. And again, I don't know in what capacity or how that was established. You have a renal cyst, but you know, it all depends what that renal cyst shows. And again, I don't like to get into these type of questions because, you know, it's very specific to you, because we don't know what, you could say it's a renal cyst, but it could be a lesion that was described as a cystic lesion, and that's what you're seeing, but it could be something else. And then, God forbid, something was more serious, and the person comes back and says, well, Dr. Buttar said blah, blah, blah. So I don't get into these type of specific questions for medical legal reasons, but there are things such as renal cysts that are benign that you don't have to be worried about, but it all depends on how it was determined, whether it was actually a cyst or whether it was it's a cystic lesion that could be malignant. So I don't really know, because I don't know your particulars, but even the studies that are done, like if it's an ultrasound that was done or a CT scan that was done, you know, they're not always definitive. So if it's just if it really is just a renal cyst, I wouldn't be too worried about it. If it's something more, then it's obviously something that should be looked at. Kellyanne, you're welcome. Tracy, if you're a member of the IADFW, you should be able to see it. If you're not a member of the IADFW, then you won't see it. I don't know if that's – oh, okay, I see you. Luis says it's on the website, on the clinic website. Yes. So on the clinic website, Luis, that's different. So that's also a patient thing. For advancedmedicine.com, that's what we're talking about. So the clinic website is just set up for the patients. Nobody can access that unless they have a password, and that's only for patients. So please don't give that out. That's a totally different thing. So let's not get me confused. I don't usually talk about the clinic website. I'm always talking about advancedmedicine.com. So that's what we're talking about. If somebody's a patient at the clinic, then they have access to everything, obviously. Yeah, Tiffany, that's why she's talking about it. I think Louise got confused there. So everything's on advancedmedicine.com. That's what we're talking about. And what Louise is talking about, Louise happens to be a patient at the clinic, so she's getting the advancedmedicine.com and drbuttar.com. She's talking about the drbuttar.com, not the advanced medicine. So M4 is not probably on the advancedmedicine.com, and we will get it up there. Alexia says, you look tired, get some rest. We really appreciate your passion and information. I need to sign off. I'll tune in again. No, I'm actually well rested. I just look this way. I haven't worked out. I usually look more alive when I've worked out, so I'm missing my workout right now. Richard said, congratulations to Amy. Absolutely. You're welcome, MM. I appreciate that. Louise, nothing to be sorry about. It's a easy thing to get mixed up. No problem. Okay, Shahina has a question, so I'll make this the last question for the regular broadcast, and then we'll take a 5-minute break and then go on IADFW. Hopefully it won't be like last week and have a big interval there where I was not able to get on for whatever reason, but we haven't had any problems, so I think I should be able to get on pretty easily. So Shahina's question is, I have terrible heartburn. Anything I eat, it gives me heartburn and acidity. What is your advice? I take baking soda with apple cider vinegar. Any advice? Yes, Shahina. So this, again, I don't give medical advice to anybody that I'm talking to on Facebook, but I would talk generally for anybody that has these types of issues to take baking soda if you have heartburn is the worst thing that you can do. All right? You should not be doing that, because all you're doing is you're further exacerbating and confusing the issue. So there are things inside the stomach that are called the parietal cells, and their job is to make hydrochloric acid. So when you take baking soda, the body says, uh-oh, the acid is being made, it's being neutralized. Acid inside the stomach is around a pH of 1. It's there to help digest the food. You're obviously not having enough enzymes to digest the food, enough hydrochloric acid to digest the food. So what happens? The food comes into your body, and when it comes into your body, there's not sufficient enzymes and hydrochloric acid to break it down. And so that's what causes the reflux, because the food isn't being broken down. So all you need is a little bit of digestive enzymes and a little bit of hydrochloric acid, and that would fix your problem. But instead, you're taking baking soda. Baking soda is making your pH in your stomach more alkaline. And that then causes the pH to rise, and you want the pH to be low in the stomach. So the heart, the parietal cells say, uh-oh, not enough acid, and starts pumping out more acid. And that's what we want. We want more acid, but you keep on giving more baking soda. So you keep on neutralizing it. And so the heartburn continues to get worse. You need to break that cycle and change it. Now, having said that, there are other conditions that can create that problem. That's where you need to go into the advanced medicine website, and you can use one of those invitation codes that some of the members had put up there, and just go in there to advancedmedicine.com and take the AHEAD map and see what your AHEAD map score shows and where the problems lie. And that'll give you an indication of whether that's what I just suggested is the issue or not. It could be other things too, but that's generally speaking what the issue is. And more often than not, I'd say probably in 70% of the cases, all a person needs is some digestive support, and that those issues go away. Now, if it's more complicated than that, something else that's going on, or something more involved, then there could be other interventions that are needed or required. Okay. All right, guys. So hopefully, yep, that's the last question. So I'm going to go ahead and get offline now, and then we will reconvene for the IADFW members in about 5 to 10 minutes. I don't think it's going to take 10 minutes, maybe 5 minutes. All right. I'll talk to you guys in a short while. And for the rest of you guys, look forward to seeing you guys next week on Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in with us today. For more information and links on other valuable resources, please visit advancedmedicine.com and medicalrewind.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, The How Report, and join Dr. Rasha Patar for his Facebook Live broadcast every Monday evening, and for hundreds of hours of Advanced Medicine podcasts, which are broadcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and are available in the podcast section of medicalrewind.com. You can find Dr. Patar on Facebook by searching for Dr. Rashad A. Patar, and on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram by using Dr. Patar. Don't forget to head over to advancedmedicine.com and register for your free account, gain access to the HeadMap assessment, and many other free resources available at advancedmedicine.com. Use Dr. Patar's invitation code 11 and join today. Thank you for your support and for being a part of making the change the world is waiting for.